A famous writer once said, "Talent alone cannot make a writer. There must be a man behind the book, by birth and quality." As the only major Southern publishing house, Pelican Publishing believes that there is something valuable about our Southern way of life, about who we are, and about this place we call home. Something worth putting down in written word on the printed page for future generations. Pelican Publishing is proud of our contribution to helping preserve the history and heritage and culture of the South, and we welcome submissions from authors new and experienced here at Pelican. Our family of authors includes some of the best-known names in Southern heritage today, plus a whole lot more. So whether it's about history or heritage, travel or trees, cooking or culture in general, if it's about the South, Pelican should be your first choice. Visit our website at epelican.com to find out about submitting your own book for consideration. Pelican Publishing, giving Southern authors a better choice. And welcome to another Pelican Pages segment here at Dixie Broadcasting. As you know, just about every Wednesday night, this time we bring you a special update on a new book by another author that's being published by Pelican. And tonight we've got another one of those live on the broadcast. And this Pelican Pages segment is going to be spotlighting an author that we've talked to before on the broadcast, Mr. Thomas Forehand, and his brand new book out from Pelican entitled Robert E. Lee's Softer Side. Tom, thanks for being on the show again.
Well, good to be here.
And I know the last time you were here, we were talking about your earlier book, Robert E. Lee's Lighter Side, and some of the more humorous stories that are associated with General Lee, and brought out a whole new aspect of General Lee that I think for myself and many of us, we've never even really sat and thought about. So,
well, of course, Lee, of course, is remembered, for the war. The war situation, and that's where he gained his fame, which I'm sure he wouldn't want to gain it that way, but
right.
That's the way it turned out. And but yes, I think as far as the first book was concerned, people overlooked that he had very much a humorous side to him. And when you read through many of the books about him, these books would be punctuated with some of his humor, but they're scattered and separated so far out that you usually don't think about them when you think about Lee, because he was also a very, very serious man.
Well, these books that you've put together for us certainly do a remarkable job of making Robert E. Lee the almost mythical figure, a real, actual, living, breathing person for us. And we'll talk more about your book in just a minute. I do want to remind our listeners that even while they're listening to the interview tonight, they can actually go to the Pelican website at epelican.com and look up information on this book and see what the cover looks like and actually read a short summary of the book itself. And folks, if you go to epelican.com, you can click on the Browse tab at the top of the website there and type in the title of the book, Robert E. Lee's Softer Side, or you can put in the author's name, Thomas Forehand, and it'll bring the book right up there for you to take a look at. Tom, as we get into the interview here, some of our folks undoubtedly heard the first interview that we did on the first book, but many of our folks may not have heard that. So if you would, just tell us a little bit about yourself and then about how you became interested in Southern things in general.
Well, quite a bit of my life I've been involved in education in the public and in the private system, and quite a few years in religious education. And then after we were away from Tennessee for a long time, and then we came back, I settled down and started working with as a civil servant. And so that's what I've been doing, for about the past 10 years after we came back here.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in Tennessee. I was blessed to be able to go to a prep school called Montgomery Bell Academy in Nashville, Tennessee. As a matter of fact, that's the school that Sam Davis went to.
Is that
under
right?
A different name back before the war between the states.
Wow.
And as I believe I mentioned last time, there was a large portrait of Sam Davis there in the main building. We passed it every day.
Wow.
I never heard anything about Sam Davis, but he was there. And I think the school now has even a statue of him on campus. And that's, if some people know, Bill Frist, our former senator. He graduated from MBA, too.
Well, now, how did, obviously, the place you grew up there is very rich in Southern history and Southern heritage anyway. Did it just kind of seep into you from the ground there?
Well, I would say it seeped in because, and that's true, you know, we had certainly have had Southern heritage, but growing up outside of Nashville down toward Dixon County, that's one or two counties toward going toward Memphis, no one talked about the subject.
Really?
That's right. No one talked about the subject. It wasn't that it was put down or it certainly wasn't elevated because people just didn't talk about it.
Right.
I mean, I lived, as the crow flies, probably 30 miles from Franklin, Tennessee, and you remember the big battle there.
Yes.
I couldn't have told you what happened there. Now, I don't know if this was my problem or just the generation I grew up in or where I grew up, but we just didn't talk about it. So now, years later, and after we came back to Tennessee in the 1990s, I listened to the Ken Burns series on the war between the states. And I learned more about the war between the states listening to that series just in, what, about 9 to 11 hours than I knew my entire life. And so I listened to the series repeatedly over the next few years, and then I had gone to school at Montgomery-Bell Academy. One of the close relatives of Stanley F. Horn, I don't know if you are familiar with him.
No.
He was the Shelby Foote of his day in Nashville, Tennessee.
Now that's saying something about a man.
Yes. Matter of fact, Shelby Foote, when he met Mr. Horn, he credited him with getting him started on his first book.
Wow.
Some way, maybe he had inspired him. And so I would, I used to put golf balls in Mr. Horn's study with all those hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of books on the shelves around me, but I was too young to appreciate them, and I never did meet Mr. Horn, but put a lot of golf balls there in his study. But anyway, he wrote the book, The Robert E. Lee Reader, and so in the latter 90s, I read that book, and I said, you know, this Lee guy's a pretty good guy. I just began to ask the question, you know, who did Lee try to do him orally? I knew Holbrook was doing Mark Twain, so I said, well, my goodness, who does Lee orally? I didn't know. I didn't, to this day, I don't know a lot of people that do Lee orally. I mean, there are many who dress up like him in the Confederate uniform and look remarkably like him, and they do a good job. But so anyway, I just started trying to write some things and do some first-person presentations of Robert E. Lee.
Uh-huh.
And grew a little beard. I don't look that much like him, but I'm getting up close to his age. And that's how I got started. So I started making these Robert E. Lee presentations about 7 years ago, and then one thing led to another, and the humor came up. I said there was so much humor. Where's the book on it? And I really didn't find one book totally devoted to that subject, so I put one together several years ago, sent it to Pelican, and they published it. So that's how that book came about.
And now, obviously, you've moved on from Lee's lighter side now to this new book, Robert E. Lee's softer side. How did what made you want to do something on this particular aspect of Lee?
Well, doing the research for the first book, and I'm sure this happens to many people that read on a particular subject, you just accumulate so much material. It's just there. You know, you mark in the margin of the book with a letter like lighter side or, softer side, stuff like that. There's just so many illustrations. I said, there's enough to do another book just on this aspect. And matter of fact, in the second book, in the first book up front, we have over 120 illustrations of Lee's humor. In the second book that I've divided into chapters with 11 different chapters, I think there are over 230 illustrations up front.
Wow, that's amazing.
So there was a tremendous amount about Robert E. Lee's tender side. And once again, I don't think people think that much about him, that he was a very tender man. He wasn't always tender.
Right.
And he had a temper. If you've read anything about him, he had a temper. But he tried very hard to control his temper. And sometimes sometimes even when he flared up, you would see him apologizing, and sometimes in a very tender way to some of the people that would see maybe when he lost control. But he had pretty good control most of the time.
He certainly, from the impression I have of reading your book, he was a very temperate man that, even like you said, even though he did lose his temper at times, oftentimes for good reason, he then would come back and try to make amends for having lost his temper in the first place. So your book definitely adds another dimension of General Lee that, again, I personally was not real familiar with. I was vaguely familiar with a few of the examples that you had in the book, but after seeing almost 200, I guess reading over 200 of them in your book, it gives a totally different portrait of Robert E. Lee than I ever imagined before. He wasn't just this great, magnificent general riding around on Traveler during the war. He was actually a real live human being as well.
Oh yes, that's true. And once again, I just hope that the book accurately depicts the man. And we all have many different sides, as Lee did. But once again, all that's there and it's documented, and it's in, you know, all in previous books and materials. And so, you know, if you had any question, you can check it out, read it for yourself.
Well, Tom, let's whet the listener's appetite. Maybe give a few examples out of the book about Robert E. Lee's softer side.
Let me give one.
Let's do this. Let's give a couple of them, and then we'll take a break, and we'll come back and do a few more.
Sure. Let me give one that on Christmas Day in 1862, Lee's going to write a letter, I'm going to, in a moment, read part of the letter to you, a couple of sentences. And of course, remember, this is after the Fredericksburg. You know, his wonderful victory at Fredericksburg,
right.
But a slaughter, nothing short of a slaughter for the Yankees. Also, not long before this, Lee's daughter Annie has died. She died of fever up in North Carolina. And Lee is really a man of peace. He's a Christian.
Right.
And so, you know, I think things start getting to him, and he... So he writes these few sentences that come from the book, we've quoted from the book, and it goes like this. What a cruel thing is war, to separate and destroy families and friends, and mar the purest joys and happiness God has granted in this world, to fill our hearts with hatred instead of love for our neighbor, to devastate the fair face of the beautiful world. I pray that on this day, when only peace and goodwill are preached to all mankind, better thoughts will fill the hearts of our enemies and turn them to peace. And I think that shows you some of the deeper feelings that Lee had about war. I think he was fed up with it at that time.
Yes, I think you're
even
right.
Even though they'd had a great success at Fredericksburg, still men died, and this hurt Lee. So I think that's one example of his tenderness. We can get a little lighter than that, and this is, we touch on this next one that I'm going to share with you. There's a touch of it in each of the books, in the first book on humor, and also a little bit on the second book on tenderness. Before the war, when Lee was stationed in Texas, he was, of course, corresponding with his home and his family far away back in Virginia. And so he decides to write home to his youngest daughter, Mildred, his little pet. Well, Mildred liked pets. She liked animals. And so I think this is just a kind of a humorous and a tender way that Lee is writing and speaking about all these animals that he's seeing out in Texas. And so these few sentences go like this. This was written in 1856. Remember, he's writing to a little girl. I have 7 hens, and some days I have 7 eggs. Having no plank, I've been obliged to build the chickens a house of twigs. There are so many reptiles in this country that you cannot keep the fowls on the ground. But the shady house that I built for the chickens furnishes them little protection from the rain. However, soldier hens must learn not to mind the rain. They pick up so much corn among the horses that I do not need to feed them, and they seem to be quite domesticated. I have no cat. You will have to use one of your letters to send me a kitten. The Indians have no cats, as there are so many wolves prowling around, they frighten away all the mice. My pet rattlesnake died one night. He grew sick. It would not eat his frogs. I hope you'll have a nice garden. Study hard. Learn your lessons well. You must write me whenever you can, and believe me, your affectionate father, Robert E. Lee.
Tom, I'm going to have to tell you that I had one specific passage picked out that I wanted to make sure that you read tonight, and that was it.
Oh, really?
It is, yes, sir. It's on the bottom of page 19, folks. Robert E. Lee's only pet there in 1856 out west was a rattlesnake. That's great.
He also had a pet, I won't say not mountain lion, but one of those wild cats out west. He had one from wild, kept him in a cage.
And, is that right?
And I think for a while when they were out there, you know, part of what they were doing was chasing marauders, you know, just like what we've been sometimes doing down on the border with
yes.
Mexico, chasing marauders back and forth trying to find them.
Right.
And for a while, I think Jefferson Davis, who was in the cabinet, I believe, at that time, so this is before the war between the states now, was even sent some camels out there, and they were trying to use some camels. I don't think it worked out too well.
That must have been a sight. Well, folks, we're talking to Tom Forehand, who is the author of a couple of books from Pelican Publishing, but we're speaking specifically tonight about the newest book from Pelican, which is Robert E. Lee's Softer Side, talking about the tenderness aspect of Robert E. Lee as a man. And you can take a look at this book by going to the Pelican website at epelican.com. Click on the Browse tab there and type in the title of the book, Robert E. Lee's Softer Side. And you can actually order this book at this particular time on the Pelican website at a reduced price. So take the time, go to the website there and pull the book up and look at it. We're going to come back in just a couple of minutes. And Tom, if you would, go ahead and pick out a couple more examples to read for us. And then we'll talk about a couple of other things, too. So,
all
folks,
right.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Thomas in just a few minutes.
Welcome to another edition of the Dixie Broadcasting Daily News, bringing you today's headlines from a decidedly southern perspective.
Daniel Boone was a man, yes, a big man, with an eye like an eagle and as tall as a mountain was he. Daniel Boone was a man, yes, a big man. He was brave, he was fearless, and as tough as a mighty oak tree. From the coonskin cap on the top of old Dan to the heel of his rawhide shoe, the rippin'est, roarin'est, fightin'est man the frontier ever knew. Daniel Boone was a man, yes, a big man. What a boon, what a doer, what a dream come a truer was he.
Thank you.
It's been more than a decade since The South Was Right by the Kennedy Brothers first went into print. Now, 100,000 copies plus later, it's still a bestseller. And what about Michael Grissom's Southern by the Grace of God even before that? Both works have been huge successes in rekindling the fires of our Southernness in the hearts of readers all across Dixie. And both share something else in common along with hundreds of other Southern works. Both are published by the only major pro-Southern publishing house in America, Pelican Publishing. Under the visionary work of Dr. Milburn Calhoun, Pelican Publishing has spent the last 37 years returning to its roots and providing Southern authors an alternative to Northern publishing houses. So whether you're an author looking for someone to publish your own manuscript, or you're just interested in reading a good book, go to ePelican.com today and browse around. You'll find books on a huge number of topics, Southern and beyond, as well as a friendly staff who know how to support Southern authors in getting their works out to the public. Pelican Publishing, giving us all a better choice. Visit us today at ePelican.com. All right, welcome back to another live broadcast, and this is a Pelican Pages segment you're listening to here at Dixie Broadcasting. And we are talking to another Pelican author, Mr. Thomas Forehand, about his brand new book with Pelican entitled Robert E. Lee's Softer Side. Many of you may already have a copy of Thomas's previous book with Pelican, Robert E. Lee's Lighter Side, some of the humorous stories about General Lee. And now a second companion book to that, Robert E. Lee's Softer Side, showing that he wasn't just a man carved out of stone. He was actually a man with a great deal of tenderness and a very real human aspect to Robert E. Lee as well. So, Tom, welcome back to the program.
Good to be here.
Well, Tom, if you would, we were letting you give us entertain us with some examples out of the book, and I have to say you do a wonderful job of reading these illustrations, these examples of Lee's softer side in first person, and so we appreciate you being willing to do that on the show tonight.
Well, thank you.
Well, go ahead and give us a couple more, if you don't mind.
Well, I wanted to tell something I thought was really unique about this second book. I have one whole chapter devoted to this subject, and the subject was Robert E. Lee's crying.
Wow.
Because one of the things that I noticed was that he cried a lot. And so I found, I believe, about 24 different times when it's documented that he cried. Mm. And I put all of them in one chapter, and it's called Lee and Tears. And why is that important? Well, men don't cry, do they, right?
Well, that's what we're led to believe, anyway.
I don't know. Even though Jesus wept.
right.
But the year that Robert E. Lee was graduating from West Point, United States Military Academy in New York, in 1829, that during that same year, Andrew Jackson, down here in Tennessee, not too many miles away from where I am right now, was burying his wife, Rachel. And one source says that during this experience, he broke down and he cried.
Mm.
And after it was over, he apologized. So I guess real men don't cry, but
if you get
this book, you can find about 24 different places that I've documented that Lee did cry.
Well, you know, I think I'd rather be in the company of Robert E. Lee and the Lord himself than Andrew Jackson. So.
one example, I think, I'll call it maybe a lack of stinginess on Lee's part. I believe Steve Wilkins in the Great Debate mentioned something about having one suit to wear.
Uh-huh.
Southerner always had one good suit. And, well, it reminded me of this story that about Robert E. Lee, and it goes something like this. And Lee's speaking the way I'm presenting. A minister's daughter came visiting, a Miss Josie. So I asked her, Miss Josie, is your father a good hat? I have two good hats, and I don't think a good rebel ought to have two good articles of one kind in these hard times. This is my dress parade hat. Take it, please. And if your father has not a good hat, give him this one from me.
Mm, wow.
And this, of course, was in the book by Stiles, 4 years with Marsh Robert. And, of course, it's showing the war is over. You know, everything's hard to get for the Southerner.
Right.
And so, according to the Stiles, Lee gave this hat to Josie, his dress parade hat. Now, think about that.
Wow.
He already had another, and he didn't think the Southerners needed two good objects when lots had none. I remember Steve Wilkins when I was thinking about that. Let's see.
You know, while you're looking for the next passage you're going to share with us, one of the things that struck me, too, that I did not know until I read your book was that when he rewrote the introductory part of his father's memoirs on the Revolutionary War, after the war between the states had ended, he was, I guess it was his brother, had told him he was entitled to, I think, a 10% share of the profits from that book being reprinted, and Robert E. Lee totally declined all of that and told him, his brother, to keep it all.
Right. I think Lee could have taken it. Now, I found out since that his brother did a lot of the work on that revision.
Hmm.
But once again, it was Lee's, as
sure.
I understand it, and he was being magnanimous.
Right.
Giving to his brother. I want to give one that's not in the book, and this shows you a side of Lee that you don't know, and this is from one of his letters. And this is, it'll speak for itself. Before the war, when Lee was out in St. Louis, he was wrapping up his work, I think, in around 1840. He's getting ready to come home. So he writes to his wife something that he saw at that time, and it goes like this. I saw a number of little girls all dressed up in their white frocks and pantalets and that. The hair plaited and tied up in ribbons, running and chasing each other in all directions. I counted 23, nearly the same size. As I drew up my horse to admire the spectacle, a man at the door appeared at the door with a 24th in his arm. My friend, said I, are all these your children? Yes, he said, and there are 9 more in the house, and this one is the youngest. Upon further inquiry, however, I found that they were only temporarily his and were invited to a party at his house. He said, however, he had been admiring them before I came up and just wished that he had had $1,000,000 and that they were all his in reality. I do not think the eldest exceeded 7 or 8 years old. It was the prettiest sight I saw in the West and perhaps in my life.
Hmm.
And that's unfortunately I didn't get that in the book that came out, but that's you know, almost directly from that letter that he wrote.
Wow.
To his wife. So this is another side of Lee, and Lee loved children and hate to be separated from his family, as many are and were during war.
And I noticed that a couple of the stories that you do include as examples in the book, even Robert E. Lee Jr. made mention of the fact that Robert E. Lee had an especially tender, soft side for his daughters, and referred to them oftentimes.
Yeah, that's
well,
right.
Well, Tom, you know, if folks get this book, they read it, what is it that, to you really want to see folks take away from this after having read this book? Why is this book so important?
There are so many things that are said about Robert E. Lee today that are politically incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. I want people to see there's another side of the man. And most of the things that are said about him that put him down, and they're all over the internet and everything, most of those things are taken out of context. And where they're not taken out of context and where they do actually represent him, people don't realize that Robert E. Lee was very typical of people in the United States back then. So I'm hoping that this book will show another side of him. And, of course, I have some of the more difficult moments in his life in the notes, and I mentioned that right in the preface.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So that's one of the things that, you know, I want people to see. And I hope if I get another book out that I'll cover more about that political incorrectness.
And
we'll see it in the context, the history of the times. Because there was a lot of political incorrectness up north that we don't ever hear anything about back then.
Well, that's exactly
And I hope
right.
in my next book we'll hear a lot about it.
I'm going to ask you about that in just a second, so hold on to that thought. You know, Tom, most of our listeners at Dixie Broadcasting would at least claim to be Christians. I'm not going to judge whether anyone is or isn't, but most of our listeners would define themselves or describe themselves as being conservatives and Christians. And, you know, as many books as there are out there about men, for men today in the Christian circles, trying to encourage men to be real men, godly men, stand up for the Lord and for those principles that are right, you know, sometimes, I know there are going to be some folks who are going to get upset with me for saying this, but I'm going to go ahead and say it anyway. That's one of the advantages of being the host of the show, is that in all too many instances in today's Christianity in America, there's a lot more emphasis on this movement for men getting together in big stadiums, holding hands, singing Kumbaya, and throwing beach balls around, instead of standing up for godly, biblical principles in their lives, and still have a tender side too. And so, folks, if you're listening to the interview tonight, if you're looking for a book that will give some encouragement to men to be good, godly Christian men, you don't have to look any further than this book right here, Robert E. Lee's Softer Side by Thomas Forehand. It gives a very accurate picture of Robert E. Lee as a genuine, sincere Christian man with a tender side. And so there's another plug, Thomas, that probably a lot of folks aren't going to stand up and say, but it's true. And so I appreciate, especially from a Christian perspective, some of the things that you have in the book about General Lee, too.
Well, thank you. And, yes, I mean, there's some things in there that you could read at funerals. It would be very comforting and encouraging.
Now, obviously, we got to ask you, especially after the last comment that you made there a moment ago, what are some possibilities for future books coming from Thomas Forehand for us?
Well, I've got a couple of ideas, but I can't tell you about them.
Oh, no.
I'll just tell you, I'm hoping to have another book out that I'm working on right now, and it will involve a lot of what I said. It will involve a little political incorrectness, but I'll just put it this way, kind of like a miniature history of Robert E. Lee's life.
Great.
And I don't want to give away too many details in the book. And then
another
one, you know, I'm going to try to write a fiction. I've never written anything like that, so this would be a brand new.
Great.
But it'll be about 85% fact, and based on fact, and just about 15%.
Well, that'll be a higher percentage of fact than a lot of American history books I've taken a look at. Well, that's great, Thomas. We don't want you to give away the whole big picture right now, but we certainly hope that when the book is ready, that you'll come back and be on the program with us and let us talk to you about the new book when it's ready.
Well, certainly, if we can help you anytime, we can help you.
And this is obviously a Pelican Pages segment. I don't want to get out of here without mentioning the fact that we wouldn't have this book being promoted tonight on Dixie Broadcasting if it weren't for the goodness of Pelican Publishing Company, which is one of our major sponsors here at Dixie Broadcasting, and they're really one of the reasons that you all are able to listen to the broadcast 24 hours a day, anytime you want to, absolutely free of charge by listening on the internet of any one of about a dozen radio stations across the country, too. And Tom, I'm assuming that since you chose to go back with Pelican for the second book, you must be pleased with Pelican as a publishing house and obviously that they are trying to get this type of message out there.
Well, certainly. I mean, I have a contract with Pelican.
Oh, okay.
So
great.
I have to go back with them.
Well,
they
your work, too.
No, they get first refusal if they want. However, the next book I write, I'll go back to them anyway. It's not going to matter. You know.
Good.
So.
Well,
yeah, they're
Tom,
good company as far as I know. Do a very good job.
Well, Tom, I just want to thank you again for being on the program with us tonight, and thank you again for providing yet another aspect of General Lee that I wasn't that very familiar with, and I know a lot of our folks won't be, certainly not as familiar as they think they are until they read all 200-and-something examples in this book of about 150 pages. So thank you again for another wonderful book on General Lee.
Good to be with you.
And folks, you've been listening to another Pelican Pages broadcast. Let me remind you, you can find out all about this book by Thomas Forehand by going to the Pelican website. That's epelican.com. And click on the browse feature at the top of the website, and it'll give you a place to type in either the author's name, which is Thomas Forehand, Forehand, or you can type in the title of the book, Robert E. Lee's Softer Side, and it'll pull that up for you, give you a short synopsis of the book, and even allow you to purchase the book online at a reduced price. Now, you can go down to right across the street to the big brand name bookstores, and it's probably on the shelf there. If it's not, they'll have it for you in about 2 days, or you can order it online from Pelican at a reduced price. So we encourage you either way, get a copy of the book, and if you have some young men growing up, you want them to know the right kind of man to be, this would be a great book for them too. So again, until next Wednesday night with another Pelican Pages segment, this is your host Ray McBerry telling you thank you for listening to Dixie Broadcasting, and make sure you stock yourself up with good Pelican books so you'll be armed to go out and fight the fight for truth. Thank you, and good night.